Objects to observe in the May 2024 night sky, or as we might call it, the observer's calendar for May 2024 on episode 421 of the Actual Astronomy Podcast. I'm Chris, and joining me is Shane. We are amateur astronomers who love looking up at the night sky, and this podcast is for everybody who enjoys going out under the stars. So are you looking forward to May, Shane?
Yeah, I am. It's one of the better observing months for us here. You know, it's kind of the first official opportunity to get to the parks because they open up again for the year and get to some really dark skies for new moon.
Do you have any plans to get to the parks?
I do. So for May new moon, I've booked off the entire week from work. And I am hoping to pick, or my plan right now is to pick the best two or three nights, according to the forecast, weekday nights in particular, and get to the Grasslands National Park. I'm wanting to avoid the weekend because the last couple of times I've been there, I just get frustrated by some unnecessary lighting in my eyes from the various guests there. So I'm hoping weekdays there will just be fewer people.
Yeah, are you thinking of the east or the west?
Again, kind of open to either, just wherever the best forecast is. And Alistair and I have been just exchanging emails. He's thinking of coming too. So it might depend a little bit too where he's going, because I wouldn't mind meeting up with him and doing some observing with him as well.
Yeah, I'm thinking of same. I also have that same time booked. And yeah, I was chatting with Alistair. He's going to go and try to stay somewhere, which is always kind of dodgy. But it's gonna have to be warm, though. Like, even on Friday, like, I think Friday was warm here, wasn't it? It was pretty warm.
Yep.
But at night, man, like, I was out until midnight, and I was ready to go inside a building at midnight. Like, I was pretty cold. Because I think it was like 19 or 22 or something during the day. But that night it went down to -1 or something. So I was like, I don't know if I want to go camping yet. So that's my thought.
I'll definitely be renting one of those Autentics. Tenting days, I think, are behind me. I just, especially for astronomy, the Autentics are just so enabling of astronomy because you know, you like, they have heaters in there, electric heaters, so that's kind of nice for, you know, warming up at night. But then also like, just the comfort aspects, like, you can have a nap there because it's not cooking the way a tent is during the daytime, and you know, it's a little quieter and you have more space to operate and just get out of the wind and read a book or something like that. So there's a lot of positives to them.
How much are they?
I'm not sure. I think around $100 a night.
Yeah, maybe I'll rent one too. Yeah, because the idea of going down there without any kind of heat, boy. But I don't know. Have you been down there when it's been that cold in one?
In an Autentic?
Yeah.
No, I've been in a tent quite a few times.
Well, but, yeah, me too. Yeah.
I'm not too worried. Like, I've been quite comfortable in my tent in those temperatures. So an Autentic with heat shouldn't be a problem.
Yeah. Huh. Yeah, we'll see. I think it's going to have to be pretty good conditions for me to head down, though I do need to meet up with Alistair. So there's a good chance I could do a night. So, because I think, yeah, anyway, we'll see how that goes. He's been helping me with the calendar, so I kind of owe him a beverage or two anyway. So it's all good. You're looking forward to, what are you going to take a look at when you get into some dark skies this May?
Well, there's a few things. Like, number one is my Stephen James O'Meara Hidden Treasures list. I'm still working through that. And I'm exclusively doing that from the Grasslands, at least for the new objects. I can relook at some objects from other locations, but I just want to make sure that every object I observe is from the same-ish skies, like, you know, Bortle 1 sort of thing. Just for consistency of the, like, logging that I'll do. And then it also allows me to compare my notes to his, which is kind of neat because he observes from a very dark place in Hawaii. So I'll keep working through that, but I think I might take, so typically when we go to the Grasslands, it's all about aperture because, you know, the darkest skies around, you know, the big aperture really starts to, you know, separate itself under those skies. But I might bring some of the tiny telescopes that I have, just to, like, I've never really played around with my 50 millimeters under those types of skies, and I'm just curious to see what they do. So I might do that as a side project.
Cool.
Yeah. What are you working on?
I'm working on my observatory.
Yeah.
So
Fair enough. Fair enough.
that's a project enough. I mean, but I'm actually observing, and maybe I'll get into that a little bit in the next episode. But yeah, I'm doing some observing and then trying to get some stuff sorted out in there. So yeah, the one plan I have is looking forward to Mike's getting that 18-inch reflector, and I want to do some planetary nebulae with that. And then the other thing, of course, is my big refractor and getting that set up and running. But I have a few things to work through on the observatory to get to that point. So it's a lot of just test observing, I suppose. So yeah, kind of just working through, taking a look at some messes. Maybe I'll keep sketching the messes, just as I work through them, although that didn't work out on Friday night, unfortunately. But yeah, we'll kind of see how that moves along. But yeah, lots going on. Maybe we'll hop in and talk about some of the stuff that we might be able to see as the week we're off. I think there's several happenings in the nighttime sky.
Yeah, let's get to it.
So Friday, May 3rd, that's going to be my first day off. Is going to be Saturn, just under a degree to the left of the moon, in the evening sky. So,
Must be early evening, I guess.
I think it is early evening. Well, why is that? I'm just looking at this. That must be in the morning sky. I don't know why I put that as evening. I was making up these notes last night. Now that one is kind of sitting out badly for me. But yeah, that is a morning sky event. My apologies. I goofed up right on the hop. But hey, at least we're recording the observer's calendar on the right day this time.
Yeah, that helps.
Okay. So Friday, May 3rd, Saturn and the moon together in the morning sky. There you go. Sunday, May 5th, we have the Eta Aquarii meteor showers. Has a zenithal hourly rate of about 50, so basically 50 meteors per hour. And of course, they appear to be coming out of Aquarius, which is going to be in your southeast in the morning sky. So you want to get up early on the morning of May 5th. I shall do that no matter where I am. I will get up and look towards the southeast and see if I can see any of these meteors. I went out for the Lyrids earlier this month, but I think the moon was close to full. Definitely the moon was in the sky. I saw none. I went out for 20 minutes, and just because it was clear on that morning, and walked out the door, looked up for a while, and I was like, nope, it's just way too bright.
Yeah, this one here is well timed with new moon, so if anybody's interested in it, great opportunity to observe it.
Yeah, have you seen this one before?
I've been out when it's been on, but I don't know. I never really paid too much attention to meteor showers.
Yeah.
I'm usually just too focused on my observing list or whatever I'm interested in for that night.
Yeah, the Eta Aquarius, it's kind of cool because it's associated with Halley's Comet, right? And it's visible for a while. So we actually got about a month. So from about last week until about the end of May, you can see it, but the peak is on that morning of the 5th. But most of the meteors that you end up seeing, at least after midnight, during that month of May, are going to be from the Eta Aquarius. Yeah, there's been a bunch of outbursts in the past, like way, way back, like in the BCE eras. But it's definitely well worth going out and checking out. So just sort of look towards the southeast. I'm just sort of looking here at the history of it, but not really seeing anything that strikes my interest other than that. So I will hop back to our notes. But yeah, I'm going to get up and take a look. Monday, May 6th, in the morning sky, Mercury and the moon are going to be about 4 degrees apart. So that could be kind of cool.
Yeah, Mercury can be a little challenging to find sometimes. So having the moon as your anchor object, really helps.
I think this is going to be a fairly good one because the planet Mercury is going to be at greatest elongation on May 9th. So that's just like a few days later. So it's pretty high. I think, well, it's 26 degrees or something like that away from the sun. So it will be like 15 or 16 degrees up when the sky is still reasonably dark. So yeah, you find the moon and then Mercury will be somewhere in that same binocular field of view nearby.
Right on.
Yeah, good opportunity there. Tuesday, May 7th is new moon. So strangely enough, we're on vacation. I know Mike is too. I was kind of chatting him earlier in the week and hoping that he's maybe up for maybe a drive out here if we don't end up going down to the grasslands and taking a peek through stuff. I find with the all the work in the observatory, it's kind of a little difficult to get away to. So May 9th, we have, or sorry, the week of May 5th to 11th, by the way, I should say, Saturn, Mars, Mercury, and the Moon are going to be in there as well. And they're going to be congregating in the eastern sky in the morning that week. So it's going to be pretty good because, like I said, on the 3rd, we have Saturn and the Moon. And then on Sunday morning, we have the Eta Aquarids. On Monday morning, we have Mercury and the Moon. And that's when things really begin to line up. And then throughout the week, we're going to have Saturn, Mars, Mercury, the Moon all sort of interplaying together. And then sort of towards the end of the week on May 9th, we have Mercury at greatest elongation. So that's probably going to be the best opportunity to have a good look at Mercury this year, at least. In the next 5 or 6 months, anyhow.
Yeah. Kind
Set
of a
your
neat month
alarm.
for that. Yeah.
Set your alarm, Shane. I know you like to get up early
Oh, yeah,
and
sure.
observe. You do get, I think you do get up early, like per se. I think you're
I'm
more of
usually up
a,
around 6:30, but I'm not setting an alarm earlier for that or earlier than that, most days.
Yeah, I think this would be like a 4:30 thing around here, I'm
Yeah.
guessing. May 15th is going to be the first quarter moon. And then on May 16th, the moon and Juno, the asteroid Juno, are just going to be over a degree apart. And Ceres, minor planet Ceres, is going to be stationary in the night sky as for our view of it.
Yeah, that's awesome.
People want to know more about that. They can take out, I think it's like Kepler's third law or something like that. So there's some asteroids to hunt down.
Yeah, and you can do some simple astrophotography there too. To catch the motion of Juno, take a photograph of that, part of the sky. And assuming you capture Juno in that frame, give it an hour or two, and then take another photograph, and you should notice some change in positioning there.
And the May 16th is also the night the lunar straight wall is visible.
Oh yeah, cool.
Maybe go back to that one again. We're looking at it there. I was looking at it back in March, I think. Had a nice look at So maybe take another look at that. I know it will be visible on the evening of the 16th because I put it in the calendar. I've been making sure it's accurate. So I think we are accurate in there. So two thumbs up for that. On May 17th, we have the third largest asteroid in our solar system, Pallas, at opposition. So I think it's like going to be about eighth magnitude. But it was the second asteroid discovered after Ceres and likely the remnant of a protoplanet. And like Ceres, it's a carbonation chondrite, but doesn't have the watery interior like we know Ceres has, because remember a few years back it had that giant ice volcano they discovered on it. So you're a meteorite collector though, aren't you, Shane? Do you have any of those chondrite meteors?
Yeah, chondrites are one of the more common ones out there. So, yeah, I definitely have one or two at least in my collection.
I gotta try to send the thing I think is a meteor. If this ends up being a meteorite, I'm gonna get it pretty well framed to put it in my observatory because and I think I told the story before. Do you remember where I found this one?
No.
So I went when we were digging the pier for the observatory, just like we were doing some measurements. It's sort of like the last measurements we were making, and I dragged the measuring tape through the pile of dirt that that my builder had dug up, and it pulled out this little rock. And it stuck to the magnetic tip of the measuring tape. So if I found a meteorite in the hole that we dug for the pier from my observatory, that's almost like an astronomical hole in one.
Yeah, no kidding.
Isn't that weird?
Yeah. Well, you should send that off and get it validated.
I know. Yeah, I think I got to dig it up. Maybe I lost it. That'd just be like me to actually do this and then lose it. But I did. I think I put it in a jar here. But I couldn't believe it. I like walked down and I had the measuring tape there. And yeah, it had this little, it's not big. It's like the, it's a little bit bigger than like the lead of a pencil, but it's a rock that is magnetic, quite
Yeah.
magnetic.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. So during the formation of the solar system, many objects grew in size through the accretion process and became about the size of this asteroid, minor planet Pallas. Most of these protoplanets were absorbed into other planets, but Pallas, Vesta, and Ceres remain as the last vestiges of the early stage of our solar system, inside the orbit of Neptune anyway. Pallas was discovered by the German astronomer Heinrich Wilhelm Matthias Olbers, sounds like a law firm, on the 28th of March, 1802. It was considered to be a planet along with the other asteroids of the time. The discovery of many more asteroids after 1845 eventually led to the minor and major planet designations. So, a little bit of the history of that there. Are you still collecting meteorites?
Not really. I haven't purchased one probably in over a decade,
Oh.
maybe more. It's been quite a while.
You have quite a few, though, don't you? Like,
Maybe half a dozen.
yeah, that's pretty cool. May 18th is International Astronomy Day. Any big plans for that, Shane? Are you gonna do anything special on that day to celebrate International Astronomy Day?
Nothing planned at the moment. The local club does a bunch of outreach that day, so maybe I'll tag along and help out or just stop by and say hi because I haven't seen those folks in ages.
Yeah, I'm just looking up. What day? That must be a Saturday or something.
I would
Is it?
imagine. So it usually is a Saturday.
Yeah.
Yes, it is.
So, yeah, but that, I looked it up. And of course, we can see that May 23rd is the full moon. And if we go back, the 16th was first quarter. So this is like a 75% moon. What were these fools thinking when they picked that as International Astronomy Day? I guess it's going to be in the evening. But even the craters are kind of like sort of a little bit past best time. Like even on the 16th, when the lunar straight well is visible, to me, that's kind of like about the last evening where the shadows are giving you sort of those crisp peaks. And then after that, things start to get pretty washed out and it's pretty bright by then.
Yeah, I'm not sure why that date would have been picked, but having a moon in the sky is often great for public outreach, with all of the detail. Like you said, it's a little washed, but
Yeah.
still a good object for everybody.
Yeah. We got to get on that committee, straighten them out. All right. May 23rd, 24th. This is a cool find. This is for our friends in the UK. So listen up, Mark and Phil. And we have other friends there too, I think, or other listeners anyway. So I was looking up this business with the occultation of Antares, but I couldn't figure out where it was going to occult Antares, where the moon was going to occult Antares. But then I stumbled across this thing where the moon is going to occult Messier 4, M4, the globular cluster M4, for people that are in the United Kingdom. So I was like, that's pretty cool. I can't recall a lunar occultation of a globular cluster before, not in my recent recollection anyway, and certainly not since we've been doing this show.
Well, that's kind of a neat opportunity.
I've seen the moon go in front of like the Pleiades and other open clusters and such, but I it makes sense because M4 is on the ecliptic or very close to it. But yeah, so because it's a pretty bright, I think you would need at least an 8-inch scope to really have a good view. I certainly would look in any telescope, but I know even in my 4-inch on any night that's less than darn good, it can even be tough to see M4 at our latitude, which is very similar to southern England, right? But yeah, if someone had an 8 or a 10 or larger telescope over in the UK, I think that would be a pretty cool thing to see.
Yeah, absolutely.
May 27th, Sirius is going to be about a degree north of the moon, so that could help you in locating that asteroid. And May 30th is going to be the last quarter moon.
Well, there you go. Lots of lunar opportunity as usual.
Yeah, I'm just looking up. I meant to look up comets, so I'm just going to go check out Greg Krinklaw. I got to get in touch with Greg Krinklaw because I did ask see if he would be on the show once, and he said yes because I'd done a little bit of an article for him. But I'm just looking up now. He's got a big list of all kinds of stuff. Might be a little early to see. Pons Brooks, I think, is pretty much done, unless you're in the Southern Hemisphere, which we do have listeners down there. So if you are in the Southern Hemisphere, maybe go and take a peek for that. And then 13P Olbers, magnitude 10.4. That's kind of getting faint. Everything else is fainter than 10.5, which is sort of like the limit for what, unless there's something particularly interesting, I would go hunting for. Yeah, S3 Pan stars. Wonder if there's anything coming up. Don't see anything off the hop. Have you heard any comet news or anything?
No, nothing substantial. We're just sort of coming out of the 12P Pons Brooks brightening, and I don't believe there's any forecast or any other comets forecasted to reach say naked eye status or something fairly bright.
Yeah. On the nights it was sort of best skies to observe it, I was in the city. So I had my binoculars on and end up getting like 4 nights on it. But then on the nights that I was out here, they end up just cloud in that area of the sky or whatever, and couldn't be seen, unfortunately. So that's the way it goes. But I know Greg Krinklaw is doing comet chasing as a YouTube channel now. And yeah, well worth people's while to go and take a look, I think. Cool. Anything else to add to this show, Shane? Any double stars that are on your radar for May?
Not at my fingertips. Still working through the RASC list. There's a few spring ones that I need to take a look at, so I will be doing that from the backyard when I'm out and the sky allows it.
Cool. Well, thanks everybody for listening. Please subscribe, share the show with other stargazers you know. Send us your show ideas, observations, and questions to actualastronomy@gmail.com.
Thank you everyone for listening, and we hope you enjoyed the show. If you are interested in more information, would like to contact us, or if you would like to support the podcast, check out our website, actualastronomy.com.